White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 533.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man!
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com and people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our beloved Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
Well, John, A-Day is behind us, and we need to talk about it a little bit. So how are things going for you?
Going well. It's beautiful spring weather, and we had some spring football to enjoy and think about and talk about, and so I'm doing well.
Well, we had 70 degree weather today in Metro East St. Louis, and tomorrow we have 100% chance of snow. I just went outside before the sun went down a little while ago. I went outside in the yard to just kind of soak up not only the 70-degree weather, but to bask in the cherry blossoms on my Japanese cherry blossom tree that I planted about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, that's grown about 6 inches since then. Because I always say that I get about 5 minutes a year of those beautiful blossoms that come out, you know. And then something happens. We'll get an ice storm, it'll pour down rain, you know, whatever, and they all go away. So I'm pretty sure that tomorrow they'll all be gone, right? So I went out and just kind of like went, oh, because I know that they're not going to be there much longer. But that's the downside of the Japanese cherry blossom tree game.
where you are.
No kidding.
Where we are, it is peak cherry blossom time. They're everywhere. They and the dogwoods and the azaleas are all blooming. And the pollen is so thick that you could write your name on it most of the time on any surface outdoors.
The pollen is so thick that I could write my hospital admission form on it.
Yes, very much. It is, there's like, you need to wash your car, but there's no point because the next, if you park outside the next day, it's yellow.
That's it. I know. I did it like twice and then I just said, oh, forget it. And if it's going to snow anyway, what's the point? But, I just still can't get past. It's almost May. It's going to snow, right? We come from an area where it snows of any significance about once every 5 years, right? And and up here, it's almost May. And this isn't even that farther north, honestly. I mean, I'm a little north of Kentucky, for crying out loud. And it's going to snow, and it's almost May. And I don't understand. I don't get it. But yeah, the pollen is ridiculous, and then snow, both at the same time, and there was another pollen thing I was going to say, but I forgot. But anyway, so yeah, it's infuriating, but it's what we have to deal with. So, what did you do this past weekend besides watch A-Day, and then we're going to, if at all, because I know you went back and saw it later, right? And then we'll get into the game itself.
I worked at the yard and listened to the Auburn radio broadcast of A-Day on Saturday. So
there you go. That's probably more interesting than actually watching it. Because I got to tell you, watching it, I don't know what it is, but part of it is the format that Gus used to use, and part of it is the format that Harsin used. But, you know, Pat Dye used to have them actually like play. It's like a game. And Terry and Tubbs, to a degree, did that. Gus turned it into one of his, like, lab experiments where he's out there on the field like the mad doctor with the test tubes. And then Harsin just kind of, again, we were playing, but to me, A-Day gets more boring every year because you can't watch it. See, when I used to be there and actually go to it, we'd make a whole day of it. You know, you had Jazz Fest in the amphitheater. You'd get some good food. You'd go over there. You'd watch it. You'd have fun outside in the sun, you know, after the long winter. There was a lot to it. But turning it on ESPN or whatever, ESPN Plus, and then I was just carrying the iPad around with me doing laundry and stuff all day. And I got to tell you, man, it just was boring. It just, I mean, any sporting event where you keep your rational brain has to keep telling your instinctive brain, like, you know, your instinctive brain keeps saying you're watching a football game. Why is this such a boring football game? You're watching a football game. Are we winning or losing? Right. That's what your intuitive brain says. Your instinctual brain, your rational brain has to keep stepping in and saying, no, this is a day. You're not watching it to see who wins and loses. You need to be looking at specific things. How's the offensive line doing? How are the linebackers doing? How's Bo Nix doing? How are the running backs doing? What kind of plays are we calling? What's it looking like? That's what you need to be paying attention to. And then the other part of my brain is like, yeah, but that's boring right now because they're not really doing anything interesting. I would argue there were about five plays in all of A-Day that were really notable for one reason or another. Now, let me hasten to add, okay, before all the purists out there get mad and say, well, you're just being dumb because that's not what it's for. I know. I appreciate that. If A-Day is for two or three things, right? It's a nice activity. If you're in Auburn, you can go there and sit outside in the sun and all that, and that's great. It's also to evaluate where the team is at this point in the spring. It's also to give a little activity to get the fans excited. It has its purposes. I get that. But just watching it as a football fan, it's pretty dang boring. How do you respond to that?
I'd say you're right. It's not an incredibly exciting football game. It was interesting to see and hear the differences. And the other thing is, I would say, like, I think the radio was the right move here because I got to listen to the Auburn radio broadcast crew and their perceptions of the different players and how things are going instead of ESPN doing the talking heads thing the whole time.
So. They're clueless. They have no idea what they're talking about.
Yes, very much. So I think that was part of it. But also, like, it's never going to be super exciting. I think it's not the end all be all of things. But it's spring football. It's what we have in between.
Yeah, it is what we had, and I mean, and it did have a few uses. I mean, we got to kind of get a little look at Bo Nix, though. Honestly, if we have it had to have been a day that was somewhat responsible for everybody and their sister on Twitter. Oh my, what even was that? Now, people out there that don't do the Auburn Twitter, congratulations, you're the winners in life over a lot of us. Okay, in a lot of ways. But B, I'm just teasing all of our Auburn Twitter family. You know that. I wouldn't be on there all day, every day.
I don't know.
But they started this thing where everybody was repeating the same line about Nix, and it just got quickly very tiresome. So what was that?
It was just people being kind of trying to be silly. After A-Day with the response, and nobody thought that was serious. It was just kind of silly canned response about Bo Nix. And
it said, I muted it, so I haven't seen it after that first blast. I don't even know if it's still going on because I have it muted for 30 days. I ended up having to, this is funny, I got the sense very quickly that people were trying to work around my mute function. So what I did, like, they were, instead of Bo Nix, they would say Pat Nix's son or whatever. I saw that like once and I thought, okay. So I immediately went in and I just actually set up mute filters for Nix and Nix apostrophe S. And I never saw any of it again. So I don't know how many have bounced off my bulletproof. Now I've revealed it. So they're going to start finding another way to do it. I'll have to add some more filters tonight before I post this podcast. They'll say, oh, Lloyd's grandson had a great game. He's a sure. Hey, what was his granddad, right? Lloyd Nix? I believe that's his granddad. Pat's daddy was Lloyd, I think. I think that's right.
I'm not sure about that.
He played for us back in like the 50s or whatever. That was just my impression of A-Day was there were about five plays of note. One of them was a really nice pass from Bo to one of our receivers in the back of the end zone that made a nice catch for
Elijah Canyon.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of negative about our receivers. I know that several of them were hurt and didn't even play. But like I heard a couple of commentators saying we needed to hit the transfer portal immediately and try to bring in some good receivers. Is that your impression?
I mean, again, we went from a very strong receiver, experienced receiver group, right?
Yeah.
To a bunch of very talented, highly recruited guys who haven't played a lot. I think we're going to be fine at receiver. I think
I thought they were all a bunch of four stars or something.
They are. They are. One of, you know, a couple of them are hurt, not playing right now. Capers, Xavier Capers is hurt, not playing. But Kobe Hudson, Elijah Cannon, Capers, you know, the young, the little guy.
Jatavis
Johnson is the little slot receiver, has been one of the big stars of spring. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're going to be fine at receiver. Malcolm Johnson is the young speed guy. He made a couple plays in the game. So I think that's a guy I look for kind of down the road to be a weapon. But also I think we're going to be playing less four receiver sets for sure, and maybe less three receiver sets because we're going to play one or two tight ends all the time, I think. So I think that's going to be part of it. But I think we're going to be fine at receiver. I think these guys are good players, and I think in the long run we're going to be okay there. And the other thing is, I think, here's what we know about the team after the A-Day game. Here's what we've learned. None of this is earth-shattering knowledge to anybody, right? We have two really good running backs.
Yeah.
We have an offensive line that can run block well and some tight ends that can edge block well. We're going to be fine running the ball a lot. And so that's going to make, down the road, the passing game easier and put less pressure on it, on Knicks and the receivers. And the other thing is, I think the defense is going to be really good. I mean, I think the secondary linebackers are outstanding, really deep, really talented. I think last year, the two linebackers had to play too much. They got worn down. McLean and Papo, I'm talking about. They had to play too many snaps because, one of the other guys sat out last year, and then the freshmen weren't quite ready. Now the freshmen have had a year in the program. They're ready to play more. We got a JUCO linebacker coming in, and Chandler Wooten came back and looked good in this game. So I think we're not going to have to play them 90% of the snaps in the fall. So McLean and Pepe are going to be more at their peak more often when they are playing. And the secondary, I think, is really, really good. I think we're going to be very, very deep and talented at that position. So I think, the defense is going to be a strength of the team. We're going to run the ball well.
Kicking.
Special teams can be really good. I mean, again, we talked about all-time kickers last week on the episode. And one of the things, we didn't mention is he only missed two kicks last year. One was a 50-yarder. One was in the rain.
Somebody pointed out that this is 7 years in a row that the MVP of special teams on A-Day was a Carlson. Mm-hmm. 7 years in a row.
We can name the MVP of special teams, MVP of A-Day, the Carlson Award.
No kidding. Yeah. When we do the AU Wishbone Awards, I guess we need to throw the Carlson Award in there for somebody that
special teams contribution.
Yeah, something like that for sure. Yeah, because we established, at least I established for myself last week, that Daniel Carlson is we've had a lot of really good kickers, and I thought it would be fairly competitive, and he's just so far ahead of all the others, even though the others are really good. So yeah, I mean, man, but Anders could have caught him if he had another year, and he could have another year, but he's not going to. I mean, I'm sure this is his last year, right? So I can't imagine him hanging around just for, for no reason. So, well, I was trying to think of other big moments in A-Day. I mean, there was that touchdown catch. Tank.
Yeah, Tank had a big run.
Yeah.
And again, Tank opened the game with a kick return, but then we realized they weren't covering kick returns. But it was a dramatic moment when he ran it all the way back. And and I appreciated they did that every time. But I thought – Tank looked good. I thought Shivers looked great running the ball. I want to throw this out there as a parallel. Okay, I want people to think about this. When Trey Mason was a freshman, he was a super fast guy, but he was a small guy, easily taken down because he wasn't that strong.
He was thin.
he was thin and he was, but he was fast. He was so fast. He was a great kickoff returner. He was a true freshman, but he was not a good every down running back because he was too small and too light.
Yes.
And it was easier for them to bring him down. By the time he was a junior, he had put on a bunch of strength and weight, and he was much harder to bring down and much more ability to run through tackles and break tackles and still had the great speed. And I feel like that's kind of where Shivers is going. I'm not saying he's Trey Mason, but I'm saying he's on that path of, you know, of turning from a, you know, a fast guy into kind of a running back who can run inside and be effective and make stuff happen. I think this team is going to be able to run the ball. I mean, I think Shivers is better than I gave him credit for, and he's going to be a difference maker this fall.
Well, I've always thought his number one characteristic is determination. He always comes across like the little kid that they played keep away from, and he just got a chip on his shoulder and says, I may be smaller and you may be picking on me, but I'm going to go out there and just, you know, like the wind-up toy that's still running and you can't get it to stop, you know. When they tackle him, his legs are still moving. He's still gritting his teeth and pushing forward even when he's on the ground. He never gives up. He's always – it's like think about the famous play against Alabama. You know, he hit the dude and just bounced off and kept going and took the guy down on his way, you know. It's just that's his overriding characteristic is I'm not – stopping until I'm on the ground with somebody lying on top of me, and even then I'm really not stopping.
So
I said on Twitter that he looks like if his leg got knocked off, he would just wipe it off and stick it back on and keep going back to the huddle. You know, that's just the way he comes across. So anything else, what did you think about the way A-Day was structured and all of that? I never really loved it under Gus. It was always, again, just more like a laboratory experiment.
Yeah, that was fine. I mean, they did a couple of things where, you know, like at the end of the half, they added about 30 seconds to give the team a chance to run a hurry up kind of thing. And I liked that kind of thinking, that kind of way of doing stuff. You know, we saw a lot of young guys the second half. We saw our new quarterback, Davis.
That's the other thing I was going to ask is your impressions of Demetrius Davis.
It was exciting. I mean, he can run, you know, they weren't really letting the quarterbacks run and make plays because they were all kind of non-contact. But that guy can make plays with his feet and get away from people.
He can
right
throw
now.
It. He chucked it down the field right on the money to that dude.
Yeah, that was a really fun throw. And you could see he has the arm there. So I'm excited about his future. I think he really showed us something. And I think he showed that, you know, that he could play. He's got a lot to learn. The other thing is I just, you know, at a basic structure – we saw a different kind of offense. We saw huddles. We saw a team line up under center. On the very first play, they threw the ball to the tight end. And we saw a lot of tight ends, but one and two tight end formations in the game.
Yeah.
We even had one I formation in the game.
So. Wow. I have to correct you here. I'm pretty sure that was not the first play of the game. It was very early on that we threw the tight end. But I believe the first play of the game was a bubble screen out to the side. And I was just like, what? Clearly the coaches don't follow Auburn Twitter and know that they shouldn't have done that. And Willie texted me and said, half the crowd just got up and left. That was brilliant. That one got me. I about fell over like, yep, because nobody wants to see that. I mean, even if it's a good play, and of course it resulted in like a 5-yard loss too.
Mm-hmm.
Cause whoever was out there on him just pasted him. So I would have probably been like, oh gosh, here we go again. So, well, anything else about A-Day?
I think Bo Nix's stat line wasn't great, but I thought he actually looked good. He had 3 drops.
Yeah. So it seemed like about there, 33, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was a couple other ones where I think maybe Nix was throwing it to the right place and the receiver went the wrong way, that kind of thing.
That was kind of what Harsin said, was that the receivers kind of let him down a little bit, which was not good.
So, but I think that's, again, it's a learning thing. It's the first spring in a new offense. I got a long way to go on that. But I think if you listen to Bo after the game, you listen to the players, it is very different. You know, the Gus methodology was that, you know, kind of that complete control. You run the play. The goal was to run the play to perfection, and then it would work. And the goal of what Harsin is doing is more kind of what I would say more traditional modern football of, you know, read what the other team is doing, take advantage of it, know where your guys are supposed to be. And if the other, if the defense is doing something specific, you react to it, you change the play, change the alignment, change where the ball is going, and make those calls and adjustments. And Bo Nix was doing that. And so I think that's it's different for him. It's different for the offense.
Very different, yeah.
But I feel good about that. I mean, I think that's a, you know, again, it's an adjustment thing for him and for the team. But I feel good about how that went and where that's going. So that's, I guess that's kind of the other big thing for me.
Yeah. All that, you know, Gus always talked a good game about letting the quarterback make certain decisions, especially if they've been around a while in the system. But I don't think he ever really did. He always wanted to make the checks himself because, I mean, you know, in a lot of ways, Gus was kind of a control freak with his offense. And I get it. I mean, he created it and all that. He knows exactly how he wants it run. But it will be kind of, I think, interesting to let Bo, who is supposed to be such a cerebral, you know, player, let him have a little more say and a little more control over what happens based on what he's seeing at the line. Seems like, yes, a good idea.
Yeah.
Seems like a good idea. All right. Well, in our off-season position discussions, we've done kick returner and punt returner and place kicker so far. And so as we continue to clean out the special teams unit.
I was going to say the special teams closet. Or?
Yeah, I guess they have a annex of some sort, perhaps. We are to punter. And while it doesn't sound, I mean, let's be honest, the punter can be a big weapon in a game, but for the most part, the punter is usually like the most boring position on any football team, right? I mean, there's not really, you know, when the punter comes out there, I think part of it is this. When the punter comes out on the field, that generally means you failed.
Yes. Right?
Because if you finish a drive with a kicker coming out and it's the kicker, that means you're kicking an extra point. That means you ultimately succeeded. The punter is like, wah, wah, wah. Here comes the punter. That means you couldn't even get 10 yards, at least the last time. So there's that connotation right off the bat that the punter is a bad thing to have to come out. But I think that's a little bit unfair because we've watched a lot of football in our lives, John, and we've seen a number of games be decided by a really good punter being used as a weapon to keep the other team backed up deep in their territory the whole game. I mean, was it LSU that had one or Tennessee that had one a couple of years ago that just kept, I mean, he could just keep you on the 5-yard line or in every time, no matter where he was.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, so the punting goes a long way, and we've had some pretty darn good punters, just like we've had a lot of good kickers. We have a lot of good punters at Auburn. And so you have dug up the top, just like we had before from the Almanac thing, you have the top, punters, and I'm trying to figure out what I did with it. Uh-oh.
So there, while Van's looking, there are kind of three lists. One is kind of just number of punts, volume, right? And then one is punting yards, kind of the total cumulative yards they punted during their time. And then the last one is the average, right?
And honestly, average should be the key statistic as long as you are counting a number. It's like you don't want this to be the equivalent of what's his name on the basketball team going 1-for-1 100% on three-pointers.
That's right. Know.
And this is minimum 50 punts.
Yeah. So that meets your requirement, you know.
I would put it this way. Total number of punts you punted indicates did you play 4 years or not, and did your offense have to punt a lot, and did anybody come along during those 4 years that was better than you at it? And if the answer to that is they punted a lot, no, nobody was ever better than me at it, then you're going to be pretty high up on there, you know. the statistic for punting yards is a little skewed because you're going to have a lot more yards if you punted for like 4 years. So I think punting average is the one that's the most meaningful in terms of who's the best.
Okay.
Although it doesn't take into account things like pinning them deep.
Yeah, no, and it is very much, this is average on the punt. I don't think this is net yards. It doesn't take out the return. There are some punters who are much better at punting a non-returnable ball.
That's right.
They kick it so high, for example, that the return team always gets down there. The other guy never tries to return it, and they're good at doing the kind of the, there's some guys who are better at kind of the pin it at the goal line thing too.
Do you remember Hal Mumme, what his strategy was with punting?
Don't.
There have been some that just say don't punt at all, and I think that gets a little crazy. Hal wasn't that nuts. And by the way, while I mentioned Hal Mumme and, of course, old Swing Your Sword at Mississippi State, it's always worth pointing out that really, really good book. And now I'm going to blank out on the title of it.
The Perfect Pass.
The Perfect Pass is such a good book. If you like football and you like offense and you like reading about the history, the modern, like in the last 20 or 30 years of the game, I always recommend this book. I got it on Audible and listened to it in like 3 days, like in the shower, in the car, or whatever. And it is so interesting because it gives you a combination of like sitting down with War Room Eagle on the one hand, kind of going through how it works. It's mechanical. And the other half of the book, though, is like the history of Hal Mumme and these other coaches that have been in his system and where they went and how they won and what happened there. And to me, that's the most fun kind of nonfiction books, are the ones that kind of switch back and forth between technical stuff that I'm learning and then history, And it really does a good job of that. Okay, so what Mumme would do, certainly at Kentucky, I don't know where else, but at Kentucky, what he did was he always had his punter kick the ball out of bounds. He just never wanted any returns. So he's like, I don't care if your net punt is like 30, 35 yards. As long as there's zero returns, the net's going to be 30, 35. It's not going to be zero or negative 50 or whatever. It's going to be what it is when it goes out of bounds. And I always thought that made a lot of sense to me. I don't know why. I guess if you kick the ball out of bounds every time, it removes the possibility of the punt returner dropping the ball. Mm-hmm. And that's a valuable opportunity in any football game, is to get a turnover on a punt return. Right?
It also removes the possibility of the guy not catching it and you letting it roll and you downing it on the 1 yard line.
Yes.
Or whatever, because you're unlikely to kick it out there.
So when you do what Mumme did, and I think his punter was actually named Jimmy Carter, it's amazing what you can remember. And I can't remember what I had for lunch yesterday, but I can remember that Hal Mummy's punter in the 90s at Kentucky was Jimmy Carter. Doing what he did, it minimizes bad things, but it also minimizes potential good things, right? It's just basically kind of say, I'm going to just take the medium every time. Would you do that as a coach if you had a team, or would you want them to kick it in the field of play?
That is super risk averse in the special teams here. I get maybe some of the decisions they made about system related to the talent they could get. And I think it's also like, if you want to be good at special teams, you have to spend a lot of time and energy coaching special teams. And I think they didn't want to do that. So I think that's the other factor.
That's a good point. They weren't even really that interested in defense, to be honest. No. They just wanted to figure out a new passing route every day or something. Yeah. Okay. So let's look at it. Let me tell you, like I did last week, what I thought going in and then what I learned. Okay. I think that worked pretty well. Like I told you last week, I went into the kickers thinking they were all going to be about the same, and I was shocked at how far ahead Daniel Carlson was. All right. I went into this thinking that Terry Daniel was going to easily be the best punter and probably Lewis Colbert second in terms of like average. And when I actually look at the numbers, I see that, Lewis Colbert is first in punts, number of punts and punting yards. But again, that's a mark of longevity, that he was there 82, 83, 84, 85. We were running the wishbone all, 3 of those years. We changed the I formation, but that's not that much different. that was a team that was an almost all run team that probably had to punt a lot of the time. And so I'm not surprised Lewis Colbert is up there in punts and punting yards. But what surprised me about him is that in punting average, he's actually eighth. He's pretty far down, 41.72 yards average. But at least Terry Daniel is number one in punting average. Now, there's another name or two here that I think are interesting, too. But what was your kind of going in thinking and then what you saw?
I thought Terry Daniel would be one of the top guys. Lewis Colbert did well. I thought I remember Duvall being a good punter. I thought he would be up there.
He's number two in two of them, and number four
and
in
then
average.
Steaming Steve Clark.
Oh yeah,
I was a fan favorite, and I thought he might be up there too. I wasn't sure.
Steaming Steve is number three in number of punts. He was, let's kind of to figure out, because not everybody just knows who these people are. Steve Clark, we call him that because the guitarist for Def Leppard was named Steve Clark, and they called him Steaming Clark. He was our kicker on our punter on both the 2010 national champion team and the 2013 almost national champion team. So he had a lot of, visibility. He had a spotlight on him more than most. But he was third in number of punts and fourth in punting yards. But he's not even on the list for average. He didn't even make the top 10 for punting average. That surprised me. Well, the other one that's interesting, and Cody Bliss, because Bliss was one of the guys that came in early on with Tuberville. He and John Vaughn were kind of a pair. They came from, I think, Brentwood in Nashville together, and they were both there from 2003 to 2006. But
he was the punter of that 2004 team.
Yeah, he was the punter, and Vaughn was the kicker on the 2004 team. But and he's number four in number of punts, number three in punting yards, and number three in average. So very consistent. He's like the most consistent one, really. I think he probably is. He and Duvall, right? Because Duvall's number two, and number four. And Bliss is number four, number three, number three. So, yeah, Bliss and Duvall, who both punted, by the way, for Tuberville back-to-back. Damon Duvall was 99 through 02, and Bliss was 03 through 06. But remember, Duvall was also the kicker.
Mm-hmm.
So he was doing double duty.
And he ran that fake kick into the end zone against LSU.
99.
The flip over the shoulder kick.
As a freshman. Oh, he had Damon Duvall had so many moments. I mean, he was kind of a quirky guy, and he was in the doghouse a lot. Remember when he bleached his hair blonde in protest or something? And he'd come out there and win the game, like beating Florida in 06, and then he'd turn around and like miss the Florida in 02 that, I mean, 01 and then 02. Yeah. But the name that really surprised me that's on punting average, he's not on total number of punts because he wasn't there long enough. He's not on punting yards when they're long enough. Our number two all-time punting average punter is Aaron Sipos.
Did not see that coming, but he's good. He's a good punter.
He was there the last, 18 and 19, and then he went pro. I don't know if he's even playing anywhere now. I know he went pro.
Yeah.
But he averaged 44 yards a punt, second only to Terry Daniel. And you remember the all-time Terry Daniel story was when we went to play Mississippi State. And in 90,
Jackie Sherrill
asked the SEC refs to go collect Auburn's footballs before the game because he thought we were putting helium in the balls. And they had to explain to him, if you put helium in, the ball actually won't go as far because it's lighter. You want the ball to be more solid so it'll travel, It's like if I punt a cotton ball, it's really light, but how far is it going to go, You need your projectile to have some heft to it. It can't be light and go a long way. That's just not how physics works. So he was convinced that they put helium in it, and then they tested him and said, no, coach, that is not actually what's happening. He's just really good. So, and I remember, were they on the cover of Sports Illustrated or something? The three of them, it was him and Scott Etheridge and the long snapper. The three of them were like on a cover of something, but I can't remember what it was now. A magazine. Oh, well.
Hunter's Digest.
Golf Digest, I don't know. Another kicker punter duo, Jarrett Holmes, is number five in punting average, which I thought was interesting because he and Damon Duvall are kind of together there, and they both did double duty. Jarrett was a good kicker.
He was there in the 96-97 Damian Craig team.
The other name that kind of jumped out to me, I remember Brian Shulman. Shulman is number seven in punting average, and he really played on those great late 80s Pat Dye teams. He was the punter 86, 87, 88. Mm-hmm. I don't know who the punter on the 89 team was. Apparently they're not on here. I don't see the 89 punter. But, man, getting to punt for 86, 87, 88, it doesn't get much better than that, does it?
No, we saw Mr. Shulman punt a good bit.
Yeah, we did. Oh, man, right in front of us. What else jumps out at? There's just one interesting thing to me is that just like with the kickers, most of these are the last 20 or 30 years.
Yes. There are some guys, in the quantity categories, there are some guys from the 60s and 70s.
Hmm.
But, like, Skip Johnson is the only guy in the average thing that's not, from the 80s. And most of them are from the 90s and 2000. So I think punting technique and coaching has gotten a lot better. I think the other thing, just looking at the numbers, that's really interesting to me is, like, in terms of the average, Daniel averaged like 44 and a half yards a punt. And Sipos was like 44. And then there's two guys in the 43s, Cody Bliss and Duvall. And then there's one guy at 42 is Jarrett Holmes, and then it drops off. There's a whole bunch of guys in the 41 range.
Yeah.
And so I just think, like, you're talking about the guys at the top are like 3 yards a better per punt than the all time best guys that are kind of the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 guys. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I just think that's a big gap between Terry Daniel and Sipos and kind of everybody else.
Yeah, that's interesting. And yet, I totally know what you mean, and you're right. It is on the field. That's like 9 feet. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, 44, 44, 43, 43, 42, it's almost like when you watch, like a race, like Formula One, IndyCar, whatever race, and it comes down to like one person is a tenth of a second faster and wins all the time. It's like those small differences, if they're consistent over time, add up to – They separate you from the others. It's interesting.
Right.
Yeah. Doesn't take much.
No, it doesn't. And it does add up. And those are the guys you're talking about that consistently pin the other team back and help you win the game with that kind of hidden yardage there. So,
and I think it says, finally, my last thought, I think it says a lot about modern conditioning and how they exercise and everything that, like you said, as far as who's in the punting average, the top 10, you and I watched every one of these, depending on how early, like the earliest one, the one that goes back the farthest is Skip Johnston, 1977 to 79. Now, I don't really remember Skip Johnston, but I'm sure I watched a little bit of the 77, 78, 79 Iron Bowl, if nothing else, to see Brooks and Cribbs and whatever. And so I basically have seen every one of these punters play. Auburn football is like 129 years old or something. And yet we saw every one of these 10 punters play. That really speaks a lot about today versus back then,
It does. You're correct. I think it's one of the areas where football's gotten a lot better.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt about it. All right. Any other thoughts about punters? That was pretty deep. I think we have a couple of fun things to say about it.
Yeah.
Oh.
I go ahead.
I was just going to say, so we did this before. Who would you take? Who are you going to put on your team?
Oh, I'm taking Terry Daniel. It's not complicated. I think he was great. I think he was a great punter.
Yeah.
He was consistent. It was long.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's like number six and number five in punts and punting yards, but he only punted for us for 3 years, 92, 93, 94. And that 92 team, wasn't great. 93, 94, he was in more strategic. But of course, he might have had more punts in 92 than he had in 93, 94. I don't know. Yeah, I guess Aaron Sipos was good, but he never seemed to be our number two all-time punting average guy. I never would have guessed that. Because when Terry Daniel was out there, they were like, wow, Terry Daniel, look at these punts. When Damon Duvall was out there, they'd talk about his punts. when Lewis Colbert was out there, they would really talk about how, you know, he had the foot problem, and yet he was a great, great all-SEC punter. Those are the three, right? Terry Daniel, Damon Duvall, and Lewis Colbert are the three I remember being praised a lot while they were playing. I don't remember, the only thing I remember being said about Aaron Sipos while he was playing is like, yeah, he's kind of disappointing us or something. Am I wrong?
I think, he, you know, maybe he was inconsistent at the beginning of his time, but I thought he was a really good punter, especially, again, he was the punter in 19.
Yeah, that's true.
And made some punts down the stretch that year, so, but I don't know.
Yeah, I guess so. So, yeah, I guess I'd take Terry Daniel. He really was amazing. Seemed like, was he just like a big old country boy, just big old dude, didn't really, I mean, I don't, he didn't seem like a conditioned athlete. He just seemed like a big old dude. They stuck out there and he just could punt the crap out of it. Yeah, I may be giving him a disservice. I don't mean to do that. I don't mean anything bad by it. I just, that's kind of my vague memory of him, was just a,
yes,
just a good old fella, you know, not a, you know, not like Aaron Sipos, groomed to be a kicker from Australia and sent to the U.S. to, no, he was just this guy that showed up and could punt the ball. So, all right. Well, that was fun. That was neat. I'm glad we looked at the punters. Do you have any idea where you want to go down the road with our positions we're looking at?
Just more punting, I think. Just more punting talk. That's what the public wants, is just us talking about punting. We may even do like a special spinoff podcast, just punting.
You're going to dig up 11 through 20 for us to look at?
Well, yeah, we're going to go kind of season by season and break down punts. We're going to have some kind of graphs about accuracy and positioning.
Oh,
and
no.
Returns and I'm stuff. We'll really get into it.
Oh, the patrons are going to sign up left and right for that. We're going to be turning people away. Turning people away. Speaking of which, I just saw where you had this. Will be riveting as our thing. Speaking of which, we do have to thank our patrons. This is the time of the show where we thank the folks that actually keep our program on the air. You out there, not you, John, but you out there listening, you can be one of them. You can join the ranks of the folks that keep our show on the air, and we thank you by name, whatever name you want us to use, as we've been talking about lately, personally on the air every week, and I'm about to do that. I do want to point out, though, that many of you also listen to our James Bond sister show on Her Majesty's Secret Podcast, which I think is a very clever name, which I made up. And our co-host on there, Alan J. Porter, he and his wife, Jillian, spent the last decade researching and writing this massive 450-page encyclopedia of everything James Bond. Makes a great gift for the James Bond fan that you know in your life. And it's on Amazon now in paperback, just a huge paperback. It's really, really cool. It's got tons of beautiful illustrations, portraits all the way through it. Just a fantastic reference work. Just fun to sit down and read a page just for, you know, just for fun. Look up a Bond girl. Look up a villain. Look up one of the cars, one of the weapons, the gadgets. You know, it's all in there. And it's on Amazon. It's called The James Bond Lexicon, L-E-X-I-C-O-N. I guess that's a British thing. I don't know. It's like an encyclopedia. It's the James Bond. It's called the James Bond Lexicon, and I'm sure Alan would appreciate it if you check it out. I think you will really like it. It's been doing great. Let's see. But yeah, if you want to sign up, be part of the fun, go to www.auwishbone.com. auwishbone.com. While you're there, by the way, if you don't know it, for the last two or three years, John and I have been producing We Believed, and it has a companion pair of books that are becoming along sooner. Volume one is, we're pretty far along now with putting volume one together. I worked on it a bunch today, in fact. And so we're getting the book together. But if you want to listen to the original broadcasts of We Believe, just go to www.auwishbone.com, and there are permanent links, players, little audio players, to all 8 episodes. They start with Shug Jordan to Pat Dye in Barfield in the late 70s. And then we have one for every, not every coach, but for every like roughly five-year period. Leading all the way up through Chizik currently. So the most recent episode, you can listen to the highlights from Cam's national championship year and all that fun stuff. We got audio clips from ESPN and CBS and of course lots of Jim Fife and Rod Bramblett and everything. So I think people really love that show. it's they're permanently linked on that page. But if you go to that page, click on the big orange button that says Become a Patron and sign up for as little as a dollar a year and join the family. Our current patrons include Chris and Clinton Stewart, along with Carl Von Drunker, Christopher Burleson, Samuel Salvatore, and then we have Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trewick and Susan Trewick, Tom Anderson, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden. Willie was, who I mentioned, was having a couple of really funny texts from being at A-Day. Ann Kangian, Hey, You Falling Up. Ben Bloodworth, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, got to swallow for a minute, Timothy, WDE Richie, we got to get better at celebrating. I love people going in and changing their names now. It's fantastic. Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, Alex Nguyen, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Cato the Barner, Chris the Hilton, woo, Colby Butler, Danny Flack, Push the Next Page Button. That's not a person. That's just what I'm doing. Darius Benton, David Simpson, Die Bama, anytime now, Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kanoy, Kevin Mahan, Christian Thorvaldson, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Algorithm. I always have fun saying that. Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Ross, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Tony Perry, 76 Tigers Still Lives, Auburn Elvis, Ben Amos, Brandon Smith, Chris Como, Darren Pyle, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrecht, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kathy Bright, Kenneth Brent Rains, Mark Squire, Matthew Flowers, Mick Vigicana, Paul Bankson, Public Landowner, Robert Drain, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Spanky, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Weagle 87, Brant Rumble, Chris, and our one-time and anonymous donors. We appreciate you all. Go to www.auwishbone.com. And now, John, we have, and by the way, I always like to point out, we don't do ads. We don't do commercials. I get solicitations every now and then, you know, hey, advertise our pharmaceutical or advertise our product on your show. And, you know, we'll give you 15 cents or something. I'm like, no, we only have our patrons because wouldn't you rather hear me read that list of wacky names of awesome, awesome people than listen to some commercials, especially pre-packaged canned. You don't want to hear that. You want to hear me go, Spanky! That's what the public wants, and that's what the public is going to get, John, in a Plexico administration. All right.
Four more years.
But now, I have to point out, you also get, in addition to that, you get to be part of things like our recently concluded NCAA basketball tournament, which was awesome. You get to be part of our the Pick'em, yeah. There's stuff that goes on in the fall, and I'm blanking out right now. But we also have the Fantasy Formula One League that is going on right now. In fact, I got to check in and see how we did after the. There was such a really good race yesterday morning that I forgot to check in and see how actually we all came out. So I got to look at that. I'll look at it at the next opportunity and report back. And we have a new Babylon 5 review podcast on the White Rocket Network. And now it's everybody's favorite new segment. From Jared. Are you ready for Guess the Game, John?
Bring it on.
Here it comes, baby. Who can
it be now? Hello, Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrecht, a.k.a. the RTL artist, a.k.a. the Death Probe, here with your Guess the Game. All right, guys, we're going to get to it, and this one is, like, super short. Like, 8 seconds short. There's not a lot to work with there, but if you take your clues, you might get there. It is so short that in this file, I will play it twice, just so that you can hear it twice, discuss maybe where it came from, and I'm going to give you one bonus hint. This game has a personal significance to Van Plexico and myself. And that's all I can say about that. So here you go. Let's give it a first listen.
Look at here he goes. I mean, this is just getting silly in the box score right now.
And here it is a second time, because I know it was so short. Let's listen to this a second time.
Look at here he goes. I mean, this is just getting silly in the box score right now.
Okay, not a lot to work with there, but maybe some of those hints helped you. I don't know. We'll see you in the hint file.
Wow. Okay, John. He said it has something of significance to me and Jared.
That's what he said.
And it's getting silly in the box score. Hmm. Well, the game I remember watching with Jared the clearest was when he and I were at Dragon Con together in 19, and then Delvin came down, and we were all three in the play in the little bed, you know, Airbnb that we rented, watching the second half of Oregon, where we came back. You know? That I don't remember anything like what that just now. I don't remember anything getting silly in the box score in that game. Do you? That was a close game.
Yeah. No, I don't remember that one.
So I'm trying.
I don't remember that line in that game.
I'm trying to think what other game Jared and I have some special connection to, because I don't think he and I have ever gotten to go to a game together. I mean, I may be just blanking out here. It's entirely possible. I don't.
Okay. Forget the connection piece.
Okay.
What's a possible game where that line was used for? It had to be an Auburn player.
Yeah, it had to be. Let me go back. I'm gonna hit the audio one more time. Let me see if I can find it.
Came from, and I'm gonna give you one bonus hint. This game has a personal significance to Van Plexico and myself. Okay. And that's all I can say about that. So here you go. Let's give it a first listen.
Look at here he goes. I mean, this is just getting silly in the box score right now.
And here it is a second time, because I know it was so short. Let's listen to this a second time.
Look at here he goes. I mean, this is just getting silly in the box score right now.
Okay.
All right. That, to me, that was an ESPN game, right? I mean, that was clearly not like CBS or anything.
I agree.
It sounded like maybe a night game on ESPN or something with those guys.
Yeah, I mean, my first thought about the going silly thing was like Trey Mason in one of those games.
I thought like Cadillac or something, but I don't know why, John. Why, you know, that's why I get back to, but I don't know what connection that Jared and I have with that.
Well, okay, wasn't there a story he told us one time about the first game he went to?
Yeah, I can't. Oh, gosh. He's going to kill me because I can't remember.
Can't remember it either. It's in the We Believe series somewhere, I think. But
yeah, it's in there. Yeah, it is. Because he was doing stuff with the Air Force and all that, and was involved in him being like a guard or something at an event. Yeah. I knew it really well, but it's been a while since I put all that together, and I've kind of forgotten, I'm afraid. All right, I think we're going to have to go to the hint. I think we're just going to have to.
We got to go to the hint. I'm
just afraid this is going to give it away. That's why I wanted to see if we could get it without it. But all right, let's go to the hint. Dang it, man. Jared's gotten us the last couple of weeks pretty good here. Let's see. Here's the hint.
Okay, you've elected to play the hint file, so let's listen to it without the name bleeped, and that could really help a bit.
Look at Cam Martin. Here he goes. I mean, this is just getting silly in the box score right now.
All right, what do you think, guys?
Oh, man. So can't. All right. So we know it's the last like 3 years, last 3 years or so. But I can't. When did Cam Martin have a big game?
But maybe he didn't have a big game by himself. Maybe he contributed to Auburn having a big game.
Well,
so I maybe. OK, I'm going to say, like, you know,
LSU this past year or LSU. What was the year we beat the Snot? We beat the Snot out of him in 14 and then last year. And he wasn't there in 14.
What? Was he there? Was he on the team in 17?
Maybe. Was he? Did he play last year? Last year is such a blur to me that I can't even.
No, I think he was gone last year.
Golly, I can't believe it. It seems like he played for us for like 12 years. It's hard to imagine Auburn football. I'm pretty sure that the 83 Sugar Bowl team was Bo, Lionel James, Tommy Agee, and Cam Martin, right?
With Stove.
with Stove playing receiver.
Steve Stove. Yes. I think he was, I think Cam Martin was like 17, 18, 19, maybe. Okay.
Right. Okay. So 17. So, and then.
So I was going to say, like, the box score getting silly could be either the Georgia or Alabama games in 17.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be. I really don't know, though. I have nothing I can hang my hat on this time. I think this might be my stumper.
I think it's one of those two games.
Okay.
They're
more likely than Georgia then, right? Because that's when we were just whooping butt.
Yeah. So you think Alabama?
No. I'm saying with Alabama, we won by like 12. But Georgia, we won like 40-17 or something. And at one point, it was like 40-10 or something. So I think it was Georgia if you're going to pick one.
Yeah, let's go Georgia. Georgia and 17.
All right, as we do, we're pushing all of our chips in the table blindly. Let's see if Jared can straighten us out on this. Here we go.
All right, Van and John, if you guess that this was Auburn playing Arkansas in 2016 with an epic beatdown for the ages, then you're right. And just in case you were wondering about that clue, Van might not remember, but this was the day that Van and I met in person. That was the weekend of Phoenix Fest in Birmingham, where we had never met each other in person before until that weekend. So we were all smiles after that Saturday night. All right, folks, as usual, I am at Yard Sale Artist. That's Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. It's all at Yard Sale Artist. If you have a play you'd like to suggest for Guess the Game, that's how you find me. And back to you, Van and John, and War Eagle.
I wouldn't have thought that Cam Martin was there in 16, but he came in with the quarterback.
He came in with Stidham.
16 and 17 was Stidham's years.
He signed as a true freshman with Baylor and then didn't play there.
Stidham started for us in 17 and 18. Was Cam Martin there in 16?
I'm Googling the 2016 Auburn Arkansas.
Because the 2016 Auburn Arkansas game, the big running back was the big guy that ran all over him. All right, we're going to the videotape. We're going to check this. This has been sent to the booth.
Okay. That game was 56-3.
Yeah, it was. That was because the running back, it was, what's his name? Petway. Yeah, 192 yards. So let me get the full box score.
Cam Martin had.
Son of a gun. He did play
seven carries for 80 yards and a touchdown in that game.
We had 543 yards rushing, 9.5 average in that game. Eli Stove had a 78-yard run. That's just sad. Stanton Truitt had a 31-yard run.
Stanton Truitt.
Sean White had a 41-yard run in that game. That's White. That's insane. This is like the most humiliating game that Arkansas ever played. But yeah, Petway went 27 carries, 192 yards. But Cam Martin, 7 for 80, 11.4 average. It is silly in the box score. If Cam Martin was there in 16, I thought he came in with Stidham. I guess he came a year earlier than Stidham, and I just didn't remember that. Because they both came from Baylor, right? I thought they came together.
Yep.
But I guess he came a year. All right, well, Jared, what you did there, Jared, in addition to having a very good, although I got to say, we didn't have quite enough to work with there. I mean, I should have, because when you said it was important, you and me, I just didn't think that went all the way back to 16. And I remember you and me meeting seemed too long ago to have been that game. So I confused myself by being wrong about how far back that game was, how far back Cam Martin was and all that. So, yeah, I kind of talked myself into a hole there. But good job. And I think we were stumped. This is maybe like the first one we've just been totally like stumped on, right?
It's true. I mean, I think we've been pretty good at this game. I would be honest.
I think we have.
I put on Twitter, I want to know if you as a listener have done better than Van and I in Guess the Game. I want to know. Okay, because yes. I think we're pretty good at this. I'm kind of impressed.
I don't have facts to back this up.
That's right. We are the world champions at Guess the Game, Guess the Play.
Yep.
And if you are beating us, I need to know about it.
That's excellent. Yes, we need to know. Jared is kicking butt at coming up with them, along with the people that are suggesting them to him, and he's going out and finding the stuff. You and I have been doing really good, I think, at figuring them out, and now we need to know if anybody else out there is making us look bad, because I feel like, yeah, we've done pretty darn well. This one, you got to admit, this one was like 5 seconds long and 3 seconds of it was bleeped. So we didn't have a lot to work with there.
No, but it's like one guy making a big play and it's, the box score is crazy. That could.
Yeah, it was. But you know, we could have gotten it. I just didn't remember everything I needed to remember for that one. So I
blame yourself.
I do. That's on me. I was just looking to see if I was trying to download the Auburn almanac thing a while ago, and I think I killed it, and it's not there. I don't see it anywhere, so I guess I messed that up too. Great. I do have the current standings in the Fantasy Formula One Open Wheel 2021 league. My team, Blue Tiger, like Red Bull, Blue Tiger Racing is number one as of this week. Mira's Del Taco Racing is in number two. Rob Morgan's Vesper Racing is in number three. Jared is up to number four with GTG Guess the Game Racing Team. And Alan is at number five with Three Brits Plus. Others of note, Richard Stevens is at number eight with his Pfizer Brothers team. And he's got number nine. Rob's other team is number 10. Delvin is at number 11. Daniel is at 13, and at 15, and Jared's other team's at 14. All right, there we go. So, yeah, it's me, Mira, Rob, Jared, and Alan. Very cool. All right, I just was wanting to see how that was coming out. Let's see, I need to push the button, right?
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, 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 on the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right, let's get our questions out of the way and we'll time to hit the sack. What's up?
All right, first question from Rusty Owens, an email. Mm-hmm. He says, I know there's a lot to talk about with A-Day, but I thought I would get you guys to talk about the news that we parted ways with our swimming and diving coach today.
Oh, thank goodness.
This program in women's basketball are places where Auburn has been near the top of the heap and nationally recognized and has since fallen on hard times. Yeah. If you were Alan Green, how would you approach this hire? I want Auburn to win at everything, but do you think there is a will to dedicate the resources to every program in order to make it competitive at the highest level?
That's a really good question, and I'm just going to say this. If it's a sport we know we can be dominant at, I would like to keep doing that. If we've never been particularly great at tennis, then I don't feel like spending $1 billion on tennis. But we know that we can win national championships at swimming and diving. And they ran off Coach Marsh, who was the Bear Bryant, you know, of swimming and diving. He was the Nick Saban of swimming and diving coaches, and they ran him off. They didn't pay him what he was worth. They should have backed the truck up to him. And so we've been suffering. We went from being dominant in the country at that sport to being terrible in the conference at that sport. So, I mean, if they could go out and find somebody of his caliber and just do what you got to do, right? Because, again, I mean, I don't necessarily say this about every sport, but there's a handful of sports that we know Auburn can be great at. Swimming and diving, softball, equestrian, right? And then, of course, football and basketball now. And, you know, maybe a couple of others. But those are the things that Auburn has, just like, you know, Alabama's really good at gymnastics. Good for them, you know. You know, Mississippi State's been pretty good at baseball over the years. You know, they've got their sports they're good at. Vanderbilt, looking things up in the encyclopedia. You got your sports you're good at, you know. And so I think you should focus on the ones you already know you will get a return on the investment. What do you say to that?
That's fair. It's very fair. I agree with you. I think you look for. I think it's not hard to look around and go, "Who's a swimming and diving coach that's doing a good job? That's treating people well, treating the student athletes well, and being successful as a good person? That is at a smaller school that we have better facilities, more money. We could get that person right."
Yeah.
We probably developed some people back in the day when we were big time swimming diving school that are at other schools now, other places that are doing well that we can now recruit to bring them back. That's kind of my theory.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to have an Auburn tie. I just want somebody, I want the best possible candidate. That's what I want.
Like our new basketball women's coach.
That's right.
Yeah. Everything looks good there. Oh, right. And the women's golf won the
SEC tournament the other day.
Heck yes. Rolled to exciting. Everything. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next question is from Chris on Twitter at CA Bush 11, who says, is this the year? Has Bo Nix improved so much under this new office? Is he focused? Is he having fun? Would you be surprised if he's a dark horse in
Iceland? And that's nothing but pure and simple old-fashioned communism.
No. You know, John, every time I hear that, I just want to
smoke weed every day.
I can't take it anymore. I have no answer for that question. None.
You know, it was when I got that and then I heard your rant earlier in the episode, I could not wait to read that question.
Come on, man.
Oh, God.
And I want to point out one correction. JD Surratt put on Twitter after last week's show. She said, I really hate to be this person, but insert soundboard. Come on, man. She says, did John Ringer really just call Butch Thompson Butch Jones on the AU Wishbone last week?
Come on, man.
Dispel once and for all with this fiction.
So, I apologize for my error.
Hey, it's the intense pressure of live recorded media is just too much sometimes. It's, you know, you gotta go easy on us here.
I'm reading things. I'm trying to form opinions in my brain, and
yeah, it's a lot.
So it's going to happen again at some point.
Oh God, it happens with me 5 times an episode, no doubt. Any other questions?
That is it.
All right. Yeah, after that. So it's been an interesting ending to this episode, at least. We started out kind of slow, took our time, talked about A-Day, went to some punters, talked about the punters a little bit. 3/4 of the audience left us. But, man, those that stuck around for the last 20 minutes have gotten their entertainment's worth. It's like we're kind of, you know, John, you and I sometimes are kind of like the match game back in the 70s, like match game 74, match game 75, where the first couple of episodes, they'd record them all in one day. And like the first couple of episodes, they'd record in the morning, and they'd be pretty serious, you know. They'd have some jokes. You get to that 5th episode recorded after they had like the 3-martini lunch, and it'd be a lot. You know, Friday shows are always different than the Monday shows. You ever notice that? That's why. Mm-hmm. They're all, and that's, we don't like drink liquor on the air or anything. At least I don't. You might. But, and there's, that's fine. But we kind of get by the end of the show a little punch drunk, I think. And that's, at least I do. I don't know about you. But that's
very fair. And it is a weeknight. So that's a no for me.
It is a weeknight. It's I'm usually suffering from sleep deprivation on Tuesday after staying up all night engineering these too. So I'm just getting a head start on it tonight. All right. I'm going to say this about around the SEC. Is there anything about other A-Day, other spring games you need to mention from around the SEC? Because I don't have anything other than I know Alabama had theirs on like primetime network television or some crap. Because screw them.
No, there is nothing worth discussing about other teams' spring football games.
I agree. And all I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say this very, very briefly and mysteriously, and that is I think we've made progress this week on our road game road trip. Is that fair?
Fair.
We have made progress. And so you'll all get to find out sooner or later what's going to happen. But we've made progress, and I feel good about it. And Men in Kilts ended, so I'm not going to have that inspiration anymore. We got to get our own momentum going now, because what was happening is every Sunday night, Mira and Amy and I would watch Men in Kilts, and I'd be like, oh, man, this gives me ideas for our show. And now I'm not going to be doing that anymore, so it's over. So we got to keep the ball rolling with our own momentum now. So, all right. Well, I guess that's everything for this week. Any last thoughts?
You know, some days you call the person by the right name, and some days you don't, but it's okay.
So, Well,
we can't all be Terry Daniel, man.
We can't. Fair thought. This has been another episode of the Ever to Conquer podcast. Oh wait, no. All right, our time is up. I think our time is more than up. We thank you for yours, especially tonight. War Eagle John.
War Eagle Ben.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.
This is my cooking steaks and crap shirt that I put on to keep my nice undershirt from getting stains on it. So this is like an all over bib, like a full body bib.
Nice.
Smells of New York Strip.
Excellent.
Yeah, I had a nice. We just had Costco steaks, and Costco steaks are like they saw off the head and the legs, and then you got the steak. They're humongous. They're so good, though.